This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Looking backwards, it sounds like you intentionally, well, you said it, you intentionally delayed going to institutions to get, you know, venture capital funding. Do you stand by that? I mean, it sounds like you'll obviously say yes, but could you have grown faster if you had taken more institutional venture funding earlier? Or do you feel like it was the best thing you did, which was delaying it?
Yeah, it's hard because I haven't kind of seen both, but our first institutional investor was Madrona Venture Group in Seattle, and you know, they're fantastic. They have a great reputation, and we've certainly experienced that. They've been a fantastic partner and have, you know, been able to add value and help in, you know, every way and beyond you'd hope an investor can be a good partner. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the type of support and the type of partnership that we get from them, like, I think we would have benefited from it early on? You know, yeah, absolutely. It's always been a great partner. But I don't think anything, you know, investors can't replicate, you know, no investor can really replicate truly, you know, help you through, just the nuances of really establishing like product market fit. Like it's, you know, it just has to be like time and obsession with your customer and listening to them and keep on whittling away. And I'm sure that there are, you know, tips and tricks to kind of accelerate that, introductions that can be made, et cetera. But, yeah, I think I'd still stand by that advice. Like figure out your product market fit with people like that are really strategic and more pure play, like focused on solving those kind of product problems and customer problems. And then when you want a scale partner, like find someone who does that well.
Firstly, when did you know you had product market fit? Was there a moment where you were no longer questioning? It was clear that this is product market fit.
Yeah, I think it was when we were able to charge for our product, because we spent a long year in kind of beta where we had, I think, a great value prop that we could get people to sign up for betas, pilots, they call them in this industry. And they'd pilot, our solution on a few of their properties, but we wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't expand to the rest of their properties, or we'd get fired or something like that. And I think it's like, we knew our message was right on, but there was a lot to figure out in terms of kind of that. When I say product market fit, I mean like really like how this, you know, how someone in a leasing office, like how they log in, how they engage with the platform, how that integrates with the chaos of systems that, you know, that they're used to working with and into the kind of chaos of their lives. And I think, you know, once we figured that out, then, you know, they're like, okay, cool. This is your product matches the promise that you kind of are pitching. And we'll pay for this now. And so, yeah, I could definitely get more specific to like moments within the product or product, you know, specific product functionality that I felt like unlocked that quote unquote product market fit. But I do think like, you know, it's getting someone to pay you, and what that check represents, you know, it's trust. It is product market fit. Like it says like, okay, this is worth it for me. Like you're solving a problem that I see, you know, I see value in paying for this subscription.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you talk about this, because PropTech has many nuances versus other categories. And I think one of the most important aspects of PropTech is distribution strategy. You have an amazing product. You could really solve a pain point for the user, but the user isn't necessarily the customer and the person making that buying decision, right? And until you understand the workflow of the organization you're selling to, you're not going to get those lucrative portfolio-wide, you know, adoption or rollouts. You're going to be a single pilot and you won't gain adoption. What if you talk about the distribution side for a moment, what have been some of the learnings, and what advice could you share with other, you know, other founders who might be listening to this, going for that holy grail of portfolio-wide adoption?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you could speak generically in terms of like if you think of traditional sales qualification criteria, like a BANT framework, like budget authority needs timing, right? And, you know, you'd think of the A, authority. And I think that within, you know, companies that focus on multifamily, there's a lot of stakeholders, like you said, people that might be using your technology throughout a multifamily, like a property management company. But the authority, someone who really owns the budget, you know, might be somewhat removed from the person who's using your software on a day-to-day. So I'll give you an example, like Knock, we're a CRM, like the core user of our software is, you know, a leasing team, property manager, people that are working on site or in kind of centralized offices if they're doing more centralized leasing efforts. Regional managers and marketing, directors of marketing or regional vice presidents, they're looking at the analytics, you know, trying to understand cost per lease by source or which leasing teams are doing a good job on their follow-ups or engagement, which ones aren't, kind of paying attention to those operational metrics. But the budget might be owned by an asset manager who works in HQ and really doesn't, you know, looks at financial statements, but, you know, isn't really truly operating the, yeah, I think it's really just being laser focused on finding out who the true economic buyer is. And like that information can often be obfuscated, from somebody selling a product, because, you know, everyone you're talked to is going to tell you that they're the kind of the economic buyer, the influencer. But it's just, you know, it's just not the case. And so, yeah, just being really, I don't want to say like skeptical, curious, like find out who, you know, who truly controls kind of the purse strings, because that's the person you need to communicate value to. And obviously if you can't demonstrate and communicate value to that person, then you're not going to have a successful outcome. So I recall in our journey, a lot of, early conversations where we had, you know, huge champions for our service among, you know, the leasing team and the regionals and the marketing team and the ops team. But we hadn't, and I remember, you know, we hadn't yet figured out how to communicate, like we'd figured out how to communicate value to all of them, but we had kind of yet to, translate that message and that value and that, you know, bottle up that enthusiasm for our product in a way that made sense to like an owner or an asset manager. And I do think that, you know, that's sort of a different moment for us. Like there's the product market fit moment where you get someone to pay you, but then it's figuring out how to translate that, that trust and that, you know, understanding of value to the person who's capable of making like a much bigger investment decision. So you kind of unlock that portfolio wide rollout. And I'd say that was sort of like another seminal moment for us in kind of like our journey and kind of helping us get to where we are today.
Now, a lot of folks try to approach this with a very, you know, heavy sales approach, which is going to guarantee to backfire on you. I don't know. Do you agree? I would probably call this part where you're trying to get distribution more business development, where you're trying to structure the deal, you're trying to figure out the internal politics, creating materials, figuring out, you know, all these, the BANT framework you talked about, right? Budgets, authority, yeah. Needs, and timing. What role is it that you would describe that, you know, helping grease the wheel and get the product distributed out?
Yeah, I think, solutions engineering, right? Like that's a big one. I think there's kind of that line between, inviting, if you're a sales, like an AE, and you invite a solutions engineer to join a demo, you know, they're going to be talking about the product, maybe leading the product demo, answering questions, you know, technical questions about the product. But like, you know, our team of solutions engineers, like they also own our value calculator tools. And so when, you know, they'll work with our AEs and our customers, when we're putting together proposals to kind of like, it's actually like a quite a detailed document, to really show and demonstrate like, hey, here's exactly the value you can expect. Here's the payback period. Here's kind of like the value, you know, we're going to be able to create for you. Which, you know, fortunately we're a company that can demonstrate our returns to our customers. There's a lot of companies that aren't, you know, so fortunate as to have something that like truly has like an ROI, like adds, increases performance. So we're lucky in that regard, but I don't know. I think that to answer your question, it's probably something like a solutions engineer, or at least our version of it.
And how did you guys think about your customer persona type? So, you know, the core segments you're going after, because there's a pyramid, right? At the very top, you've got your large enterprise style contracts and customers. And at the very bottom, you've got your, you know, independent or, you know, mom and pop run development firms, or even, you know, property management firms. Where do you start with, and what is the focus for you now? We've got a lot of listeners, especially from the real estate industry. What would be the ideal type of customer for you?
So definitely, you know, institutional multifamily operators, I'd say large multifamily operators. Like a small knock customer is 1,000 units. And a big knock customer is like, well, like we serve over half of the NMHC top 50, you know, owners and managers. I think there's, I don't know, you hear different numbers all the time, but the one I heard most recently was like, there's now 60 million rental units in the United States. And I think that 15 or 20 of those would be considered the real large, you know, 200 plus unit type complexes. And we focus on that asset type and the types of owners and operators of large multifamily assets. So,
you know, and did you start there as well?
Say that again.
Did you start right at the top of that pyramid when you started, or did you have to go sort of, did you find segments that were easy to approach and work with, or did you go straight for the top?
It's a great question. We were thinking everybody. Because I think from a rent, you know, again, when we started, we thought about the problem set from a renter's perspective, right? Like, you know, my wife and I were actually looking for a new place to live right now, which has been kind of, I mean, one, it sucks, still sucks years later. So I guess we haven't, you know, totally licked the problem yet, but it's funny because as a renter, prospective renter, you know, I'm not totally, you know, like I don't necessarily, I'm not opposed to, it could be a big building I want to live in, or a small building, or it could be a single family home. Like I'm kind of looking for like, you know, two beds, two baths, like 1500 square feet and like a night, you know, in a location that I like. Like I'm not totally picky on the asset type. Now I know that some people, you know, care a lot, or they're optimizing as a renter for a particular asset type. But I still believe that most renters, you know, are less concerned about how many floors the building that they live in has. They're more interested about like the unit, you know, unit amenities or the unit qualities. And so when we, sorry for the long story here, but when we started, we were really thinking from a renter's perspective and feeling like, well, these problems exist regardless of the asset type. So let's go build solutions for the companies that operate any of these asset types. And so we had a ton of customers that early on, like I'd say the majority of our customers in our first year were what we'd call like single family property managers. Uh-huh. So they're like focusing on a lot of single family home rentals or duplexes, triplexes, offsite managed properties, smaller properties. And they were a blast to work with, but you know, they have very different needs than a larger multifamily operation. And like the example, and I actually shared this earlier during an onboarding call with some new hires. Like if you've got, we had a feature early on where when a manager rented a unit, they could click deactivate the unit. And when you clicked deactivate the unit, you know, this little pop-up would come up and it would say, you know, 25 people have toured this and 56 people have expressed interest. You know, would you like to let them know that it's no longer available? And you could type a little message and click send, and it would send a text and an email, kind of a personalized to all of those folks. And the people that operated single family residential or like offsite managed residential multifamily, kind of the longer tail of the market, they loved that feature. It was like the best feature in the world for them, because they're like, I don't have any other inventory. I rented that single family home, or I rented that one condo unit in the building, or I, you know, it's a triplex and there's only one unit available. I don't have similar inventory. So I would love to just let all 50 of those folks know that it's no longer available. But then the multifamily operator, you know, they would call us and say, hey, like deactivate that feature or hide that from my team. Because if I catch them notifying 50 prospective renters that that a particular unit isn't available anymore, I'm going to like, I don't know who is going to get fired first, you or the leasing agent, because, you know, in a 200 unit property, there's always something available, right? Like I might not have a one bedroom available now, but like I've got three lease expirations coming up in the next 6 weeks. And I want to like keep that pipeline engaged and warm. And so just like, you know, it's a long story, but I think it's so critical for people who are thinking about building technology or investing in technology in the long-term rental market. It's like there's 60 million long-term rentals, but like the behavior and the buying habits and the needs of the companies that operate, you know, large institutional multifamily portfolios where their properties are several hundred units compared to like the smaller properties, offsite managed, you know, duplexes, triplexes, eightplexes, et cetera, single family homes. Like they're fundamentally different companies, even though the asset is still a long-term rental with four walls and a roof, you know, and it's the underlying is kind of the same thing.